Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones. This is for the week of March 8th, 2011. I am your host, Justin Azevedo. Who is with me this evening?
Hi, I'm Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, MG underscore Haley on Twitter.
Hey, it's King Jaffe from hitthepost.ca, King Jaffe 29. That's what it is at Twitter.
And Mike from Hit the Post as well. And their Twitter is Hit the Post.
Cool.
The smoke.
So onto the smoke we move, and just a quick recap of last week's games. We played at Chicago the 3rd of March, 6-4 loss, a relatively lopsided game until the Flames decided to battle back after Carlson went back in net and made it pretty close at the end, but couldn't came up just a little bit short. Friday the 4th, they played against Columbus and able to squeak out a win there, 4-3, and relatively good game from the boys. I mean, good pressure the entire first and second periods and kind of let them back in the third. And then against Nashville, Iggy getting his 30th goal for the 10th consecutive season, and Glenn Cross with the game winner. So once again, a relatively dominant performance. It just didn't really come up in the scoreboard until the last period, but anybody got anything to say about that?
I guess just that the Nashville game, or yeah, Nashville game was obviously, you know, the best performance out of the three. The other two, especially the Columbus one, were a little worrying, the way that Calgary kind of seemed to not be able to really keep their foot on the gas, so to speak, and let the teams back in the game. And obviously with Chicago, they were down and out pretty much from the start until the third period, when they pretty close coming back. But, you know, you shouldn't have to engineer that massive comeback, especially considering they've played relatively well against the Blackhawks for the first time in like 2 years this season. So that was disappointing, especially since they're one of the better teams in the conference now, and the other two are kind of hovering around the same place. So those were important wins. But
I had a chance to go to the Nashville game, and it was just amazingly exciting. The it's getting so late in the season, and those two teams are so close together and both on the bubble. There were definitely a couple of brain farts from Calgary along the game, gave up a couple of goals that they probably could have kept. You know, just super exciting to go down goal, tie it up, go down another goal, tie it up, and then go into the lead and actually hold on for the 2 points and not go to overtime, not go to shootout, win it in regulation. It was an amazing game. It had tons of fun. I hope the rest of the season goes that way. I mean, just close, grinding wins.
Mm-hmm. And Gendler's goal was awesome. I mean, on the penalty shot as well.
And that was, it was spectacular. So I'm like standing up and I'm thinking that the people behind me just hated me, but I don't know. Like, it's a penalty shot. It's Iginla.
Fuck the people behind you. You got to stand up for that stuff.
I don't know. Like, I'm standing up, and then after he scores, it's just like massive cheer. It was just excellent. So it was a really fun game.
Oh, well, I mean, I just feel like the team is playing what I like to say is, they, you know, kind of efficient right now. And they obviously are clicking. And especially in that Chicago game, there were some moments that I really felt like the team, they kind of get it. And I haven't seen them really get it. I mean, well over, like, a year ago, they didn't get it. They didn't get it at the beginning of the year. And now they just seem to, they know what they got to do to win. They know, they understand themselves a little bit better. And I just will never, for the life of me, will not understand why it just wasn't working. And I mean, maybe we can bring this up when we discuss the other points with Daryl and whatnot. But I don't know if he was prohibiting this, or, I mean, he was prohibiting, you know, these guys kind of getting in the zone and understanding each other. I mean, but there's obviously something going on. I'm not in that locker room, but I just feel like right now they kind of are on the same page, and it was kind of clear, especially in that Chicago game.
Completely agreed. I guess we'll move right into the bonfire then.
The bonfire.
Into our middle segment, and not a lot going on in the Flames world this week. Just a couple pieces of news with Morrison being out 2 to 3 weeks, and not really anything in terms of topic fodder, but Ryan made a great post on Matchsticks and Gasoline the other day on the 6, talking about how Daryl Sutter's moves made the Flames a playoff team, and there's been quite a bit of debate as to how much Sutter's leaving, of like being asked to step down or whatever, has actually impacted the team. And I know that Eric has one view, and Jaffe has another view, which is good because Eric will be able to defend himself. So everything you say here, Jaffe, is completely correct. So the amount of change that went on during the summer, and from the point where he made the FNUF, or where Daryl made the FNUF trade last year, to where we are right now, the Flames have changed quite radically, and there's still obviously a large footprint that Daryl's had on the team. And like I said, I'm just wondering what you guys think and how much influence he still has on this team relative to how much influence Feaster currently has on the team. So I guess Jaffe, if you want to start.
Well, I'll start it, obviously, because this has kind of been my point, because when they hired Jay Feaster, the first thing I said was, no, please, this is exactly what's going to happen. Daryl is going to get fired at some point this year, and this guy is going to step right in. I mean, I was almost like at that moment, I'm like, you know, I'd rather keep Sutter around. But let me everything I'm saying, I will precurse by saying that it's not Feaster more than it is Darryl being gone. So Feaster is almost like, and I always say this, that when you have a talented team, you have some other components that come into play that can hinder that team's ability to win or lose games. I believe that Sutter, to an extent, was kind of hindering something. And by removing him, anybody who's there, and Feaster is, you know, he's more of a happy-go-lucky guy, engages the media. I've actually met him a couple of times. He's a very nice guy. So he's definitely, it's definitely a change in personalities that you have going on there. Now, how he interacts with the players and how he interacts with the coaching staff, and I can't comment on that. But I can say that I just feel that there must have been something when Sutter was around that kind of weighed heavily on this team. Maybe they were very intimidated knowing that he was watching or something, where they just didn't have the confidence. And I mean, the beauty of having me, I guess, on this stuff is I'll always kind of interject with basketball, because for me, basketball and hockey almost, you know, they kind of play in together. And the Miami Heat are going through something, you know, they lost again tonight. And I mean, you can't question who they have on their roster and what they have. Yeah, maybe they're not the best basketball team, but it's clear when they play now, they don't believe that they can win games at the end of games. They just don't believe they can win. And it doesn't matter how good they are, they don't believe they can win. And I think the Flames were at a point where they just somehow, I don't know if it was a belief of not winning, because it's in the Heat's sake, they just can't win in close games. They got a bunch of stuff, they got a bunch of stats you can throw in their face. With the Flames, it was just kind of one of these things where, like, you can't click. They can't come together as a unit. And it was just, that was weighing on them. And it seems like when Sutter left, it took a couple of weeks, and then boom, you know, they start winning, and then they just kind of look like a legit team. I don't call them necessarily a contender, but they look like a playoff team that, you know, is going to put in a playoff effort. And they just weren't that before. And I don't know if it was Sutter that was creating that or what, but I definitely know that it's not Feaster coming in and all of a sudden Feaster's the reason they're winning. I think it's more a removal of Sutter than anything else.
I don't know. The question of who's responsible for the team we have now, is it Sutter or Feaster? I'm going to have to lay a lot of the credit at Sutter's feet. I mean, almost everybody that you see out on the ice is somebody that he signed or picked up along the way. So that's definitely mostly his responsibility. Is there a huge emotional overhead that he created on the team that sewered our results in the first part of the season? Maybe, I don't know. I don't live in the locker room, so I just don't know. But definitely those guys are his he was responsible for them. The other part of Sutter's legacy, though, are these massive boat anchors that we have hanging around the franchise, which are you know, Code Leak getting paid tons of money to play in the AHL, and that was a huge nightmare, and it's a great thing that Feaster did to waive him and get that off the roster. You know, Steve Staios, like, I still don't understand why he's playing even right now in place of Brendan Mickelson. Like, you might as well. I see that you've got basically similar risk between those two players and way more development potential in bringing Mickelson into the game. So why he's not playing, I don't understand it. You know, there's just a few things like that I think definitely, like I say, the team that's there is Sutter's team with a little bit of, I don't know, Feaster high fives and warm fuzzies, I guess. I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but definitely I blame Sutter for the good and the bad, and I'm going to get used to blaming Feaster for these kinds of ridiculous moves as well.
I think Modine only played, like, what, 6 minutes or something in that game, if anything.
Yeah.
Judging by...
I checked the shifts, and he actually had 15 shifts. And that
really?
just shocked me.
That.
I had to look it up, because I thought he hadn't played at all. And when it said 15 shifts and like 9 minutes or something, I was just blown away. Because
wow.
I hadn't noticed him at all, and except for the time he was sitting in the box because he was a bonehead. So
judging by Modine's quotes, you know, about Jay Feaster that Eric had up the other day, it definitely seems like he's creating sort of like trying at least to create like a much lighter atmosphere, you know, around the dressing room and around, like, because, you know, it is a work environment. You want your players to be in a good mood when they come to the rink and stuff like that. Obviously, it's not 100% about that, but, you know, I'm sure it helps. We don't exactly have proof of that because, you know, we're not around the Saddledome and in the dressing room and so on.
Well, herein lies the problem with with what's going on with Feaster, and this is kind of where I kind of maybe I'm predicting a bad future, and I'm being half empty, you know, glass half empty here. But the problem is you have a team this year which had expectations to improve, and an ownership group that obviously wants them to make the playoffs and be competitive. It wasn't working out. They fire the general manager. The team turns around. They become competitive. They make the playoffs. This is an isolated situation within this season. And because of that, if they go on and they reward Feaster just simply because of whatever this phenomenon is that got them to turn around and actually start winning, mm-hmm. which we've already come to, we've pretty much agreed that pretty much these are Sutter's move, so it's Sutter's team. General manager move-wise, it's Sutter's team. So there's something at play that got them to compete. And then you end up hiring another guy who I question his track record. And then you end up signing yourself away 2-3 more years to let this guy build this team. And where's the future? So I think that's the biggest question they need to be asking. And maybe now we're moving into a what happens this summer and who's the next general manager discussion. But I think it's very important that when Feaster is hired, it's not looked upon what happened between December and the end of the season, and that's justification for him to get a job. I think he should be, you know, viewed like any other general manager that's going to get interviewed for this position, the same thing, and his track record should speak for himself. And honestly, there's a reason that Steven Stamkos plays for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it's not okay hockey, I'll tell you that.
You brought up one, I guess, phrase. It was this season in your little talk there, is this season. And you know, regardless of what Sutter did last year with trading Phaneuf and Jokinen and all that stuff, it's pretty obvious that the ownership still had full faith in him going into the draft and going on to July 1st and all that stuff, because they allowed him to spend his money. They allowed him to trade for players that would, you know, fit that win now mentality. And I made a point of this in the post, in that the Flames had really shitty bounces and they weren't playing to their true talent level until really a week or two before Sutter got fired. Like that game against Dallas, the 23rd. And I think Sutter got fired on the 29th. That's when they started to turn shit around. And to have Feaster just, you know, kind of get in there right when those percentages were coming back is going to be looked on favorably by the ownership. And I'm not really sure that's accurate, especially just because that wasn't evening out of percentages and it was the team playing to their true talent level or even above their true talent level. And now the way the team's playing now probably is where they should have been playing the entire season. And to have him be the recipient of the benefit of that isn't fair. And I mean, if the team had been playing this way the entire season, there's no question in my mind Daryl would still be up there in the GM's booth.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the way the team is playing since Christmas is off the charts, right? Like we're collecting points at a rate that nobody really can sustain.
Were we really a 394 team in terms of points gained previous to December 23rd. We're
right.
Really that bad of a team, and we're not really that bad. We're good at this team right now. So.
No, but they are still, yeah, playing above their heads to a degree. I mean, they should have lost against Columbus.
If you'd asked me at the start of the season what kind of team had Daryl Sutter put together, I would have said it's a 9th or 10th place team in the conference. And now we're looking at a team that might be 8th or 9th place in the conference, right? I mean, we still have a long ways to go before we finish the season. I think that's really, you know, that's the type of team Sutter built. He's a bubble team.
Yeah, I just remember saying, like, in the, you know, the season preview before the season even started, that I thought it was definitely possible for the team to bounce back and, you know, make the playoffs, because they did get such horrible luck at times last season, even though they earned it on occasion. But that's pretty much all there is to it, I think.
And I mean, that's why I was saying that, you know, if you go ahead and hire somebody just based off of having a team that could fall anywhere between, was predicted to fall anywhere between 8th to 10th place, actually get the 7th or 8th spot. And that's why you reward them with a job. It's like, good luck. Because, I mean, it's going to be hard. There's a lot of building to be done on this team. And I just think that going forward, the new GM has to kind of come in with some sort of vision, some sort of game plan for the next 5 years and where he's going to send this team. And so if it's just a, you know, patchwork every year to just kind of make the 8th spot so you can get the, you know, so you can get your playoff money, then I guess so be it. You know, you could be Toronto and never make the playoffs. But at the same time, as fans, you want to see the team compete and know, look forward to something. And I don't know, right now it's kind of in flux, and I just feel like keeping somebody and keeping this old regime, I think a new fresh face needs to come in more than anything else, regardless of what happens at the end of the year. Someone who hasn't been around. And, you know, that's all.
what's going to happen to Feaster if they do make the playoffs and lose in the first round, right? I mean, is that still a success considering where they were at the time he was hired? I don't know. It's just, I mean, they have, like, the way they're playing right now, they have the potential to, you know, steal a playoff round, but so do most other teams that are in the top eight of the Western Conference, and that's kind of their dilemma. They're in the middle of the pack.
I was going to write about this on Hit the Post, and I wasn't able to. And maybe I still will, but what I'm just wondering, what is ownership's obsession with the 2004 Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean, it's the type of thing where you look at and you look and see, and it's almost like they got beat by those guys, and they can't help but, like, bring on, you know, the general manager, and then, you know, Corey Sarich and Andre Roy and all these guys, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's very bizarre to me. I can't gather my thoughts right now, but I really had one of those things. And then it's just like you bring in a Feaster, and now Feaster is the GM, for acting GM. And then he brings in Modine, who was on that team as well. It's almost like, why don't we go get Javi Bulin while we're at it, you know, or Le Cavalier. Let's trade Iginla for Le Cavalier. It's just kind of funny that's the team that beat them, and then all these guys just keep coming back, and it's like, oh, well, let's just, hey, it worked in 2004. A lot will dictate to how they finish and you know, how they end up doing in the playoffs, and it'll be interesting. What do you guys think if they actually go on a nice, like, long run in the playoffs this year? What do you think that'll mean for Feaster? Will Brent Sutter get credit? Will Daryl get credit? Will Iginla get credit? What do you think? Like, let's say they go on another big magical run to the West Finals or even in the Stanley Cup Finals.
If they get past the first round, nothing changes. Literally nothing. Feaster's often offered a job the day after they get eliminated permanently, and the ownership's mentality going into next year is to add more parts to try and get further in the playoffs. Guaranteed, that's what happens if they do get past the first round.
Good point.
Sutter obviously deserves some credit, Brent, that is, but I don't know if he's Jack Adams worthy, as George Johnson was saying the other day. I don't know if you guys saw that article.
That article was the worst Homer article I've ever read. I like butter as much as anybody, but that article was just trash.
So I think the general consensus here is that this is still Sutter's team, and the majority of the results are because of what Sutter has done, and the sphere of influence that Feaster's had thus far isn't exactly great in terms of upping the play of the team past what it should have been at the start of the season and past the percentages just balancing out.
Right, yeah.
Do you guys are familiar or not with Feaster's drafting record?
It's shit. Yep. this was my very first post that Eric put up when Feaster was officially given the acting GM job. That was my very first comment was, now go look at the drafting record from here to here, and there's really only one player that's an NHL regular that will actually, you know, contribute anything meaningful, and that is Steven Stamkos, who was selected first overall. So
that doesn't count, and Feaster gets credit for coming up with that scene Stamkos, you know, Seen Stamkos campaign that they did down there in Tampa, which was just
stupid.
They still make fun of it down there.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke to have that even before the draft, and yeah, to have that something that ridiculous. And it's like, you know, you don't have a marketing team or something. You guys don't employ that, but that's a whole different issue. So good talk, everybody. And I guess we'll move right into our next segment.
The Kindling.
Into the Kindling, and quick preview of the next week's games. Dallas tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Mountain Time. That's in Dallas. Phoenix on Thursday in Phoenix, and that's also 7 o'clock Mountain Time. And then against Vancouver on HNIC, and that's 8 o'clock Mountain Time. So obviously all three big games, and two of them against teams we're directly fighting for in a playoff spot. So anybody got anything to say?
I'm wondering, when are they going to catch up in those with all the games that they have ahead? Is it going to come pretty much down to the last week? I keep looking at that. I'm like, there's so many teams behind them still that have a couple of games. So I think going forward this week, they just have to keep winning, because if they want to get this playoff spot, it's very important that they don't lose any of that ground, because they just don't have that luxury with those teams still playing catch up.
Phoenix will be, by the end of tonight, even with us. Dallas is still two games in hand on us. Minnesota will be one game behind us, and Edmonton and Nashville will also be one game behind us, and then Anaheim will have two games in hand still. But we were actually talking about this before the podcast, and right now Minnesota, Anaheim, and Nashville are on the outside looking in, and if all three of those teams win their games or two games in hand, they're still tied with us. So right now Calgary's in that position, as you said, where they just have to win and they'll be in. So they control their own destiny, and that's good. So anyways, if nobody else has got anything to add, I guess we can just move on to flameouts. Haley, why don't you start?
I guess this is probably an easy one, but Jerome Iginla, 10 straight years of 30 goals. What can you say? It's amazing. He clearly deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, despite what I've been reading. Some people debating the fact that he hasn't won a cup.
If you don't think Jerome Iginla is a Hall of Famer, then you're a fucking idiot. Plain and simple. That's the statement.
Totally.
We didn't win a cup? I thought we did win.
Yeah, game six so far, maybe. I
seem to remember seeing the puck over the line.
Yeah, I remember that too. And apparently the NHL doesn't. Sorry about cutting you off there, Haley. But
no, that's fine. That's all I had to say. You know, Jerome is awesome.
Jaffe?
I'm going to give flame up. Let's just give it to Mark Giordano because he's Gio. And honestly, it's the one bright spot right now that the team has that honestly going forward that, you know, Flames fans can really be looking, you know, look forward to having. And I also, on the same note, Mika Kiprusoff is a rock, and that guy, I mean, he's just invaluable to the team. And, you know, he wants to play in Calgary. He's never complained. He's gone through a lot. He's had coaches mess with his head, but he's always there. He's always playing well. So we'll just do Gio and Mika.
Mike?
I just had a couple of thoughts. Before I came in, I was able to read Haley's piece on the Clear Day there in Abbotsford today. And just, you know, John Armstrong, sorry to see him go. I know WI, she's sorry to see him go.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a little bit too bad that he has so much potential and just, you know, plagued with injuries and never really worked out so far. It's pretty much done. And the other one that surprised me there was John Rio. I thought that he, you know, anytime I've seen him play, he's a real hardcore plugger. And I don't know. I mean, whatever reason, nobody seems to like him. They won't sign him to anything, and they now have cut him. So I don't really understand.
I was more surprised that fucking Chris Chucko made the clear list somehow.
Why?
Like, isn't he still out with
it? He's hurt the entire season. He's fucking brutal. And they decide to, or I guess I don't even know what the fucking term would be, but decided to not clear Roe Armstrong and McMillan. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Management pisses me off.
I take it back. Chucko is someone, other than Giordano, that's someone that the Flames fans have a lot. He's a first round pick. They have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we're still waiting for that. When did he get drafted? What was it, like 2001?
2004 or something?
Yeah, I think it was the draft after after the run. So
he was never going to be an NHLer. And yeah, I don't know.
Matt Keatley, last year being the starter for Abbey the entire year, and then this year down to the ECHL and not making it through the clear list too, so.
Well,
the nerving, it's been fantastic.
Yeah, so that is a positive that we've all been waiting for Irving.
From what I've seen of his stats.
Yeah, we've all been waiting for Irving to, you know, take that jump, and it appears at least this year that he has moved on to that next level, and will probably be battling for the backup position next year, and a legitimate battle, not just being placed there because of his position in the organization.
What about the Flames getting McGregor Sharp? That is probably the coolest name on the planet.
I have never seen a first name with that kind of capitalization. Like, it's just weird to look at, because for whatever reason you see Mac and then whatever the second last name or second part of the name is, you automatically think it's a last name, or at least I do in my head. And like, mm-hmm. the guy's name is Sharp McGregor, but anyways, it's just kind of weird. But I agree, it's a pretty sweet name. My flameouts, I just, yes, once again, give a shout out to Iggy and everybody's favorite player getting the 30th goal for the 10th season in a row, and they're playing well, so hopefully they can keep that going through the next three games this week. And I guess that's it. So you can find Haley on Twitter at mghaley at matchsticksandgasoline.com. Jaffe is kingjaffe29 on Twitter and hitthepost.ca. Mike's also at hitthepost.ca, hitthepost on Twitter. And I'm AzavitoJ on Twitter, matchsticksandmicrophones@gmail.com if you want to talk to us. And I guess we'll talk to you guys next week.
What's this? A secret message at the end of the podcast? Oh my god! It is.
That's really all I wanted to say. So, yeah. Cole Baines.
Ooh, go Flames, go.